From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the last weekend in May 2020. Scientists have developed a mouse that is 4% human. And if that's not creepy enough, they named him Mickey. A recent study says robocalls are down by over 35% because the coronavirus is spreading through the call centers. And I have to admit, I have mixed emotions about that. Okay, here's an example of American ingenuity at its finest. With states loosening restrictions, a Wyoming strip club threw a party called Masks On, Clothes Off. Who says they're not essential? And finally, scientists report that during prehistoric hard times, dinosaurs reverted to cannibalism. See, it could be worse. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Kyle Tedding, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty decent week. NASDAQ was up 1.8% this week, tacking on 165 points to close at 9490. The broader markets, the S&P 500, up 3% for the week. What a great week. Tacked on 89 points, closed at 3,044. First close for the S&P above 3,000, almost 3 months. Dow Jones Industrial Average added 3.8% this week, tacking on 918 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with a Dow finishing the week 25,383. First close for the Dow above 25,000 since way back in early March. Kyle, let's start off with some of the obvious. You know, the stimulus spending has been gigantic. Governments around the world in the financial crisis spent the equivalent of 1.5% of global GDP. To get things going this time around, governments around the world have spent the equivalent of 4.5% of global GDP. To stimulate the economy is a gigantic increase, triple the response that we did, that we saw in the financial crisis. And the markets are clearly reacting to all this stimulus spending. Now there's talk in Washington that they're going to come up with yet another stimulus program. The enthusiasm about a potential vaccine, that's a maybe. Enthusiasm about governments reopening, that's a maybe. But you can speak with certainty about the sheer size of the stimulus spending. You know, clients have been asking me all the time, you know, why is the market up so high? And, you know, frankly, the easy answer is look at all the money, follow the money. 4.5% of global GDP, no matter how you measure, is a gigantic, gigantic number. Kyle, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at the speed and the scope of the response of global policymakers, of global central banks. We have not seen a response of this size, certainly in my lifetime and you know, far beyond that. And I think the realities are that, you know, when you look at, for example, what the Fed is doing, already putting $1.3 billion into corporate bonds, both high yield and investment grade corporate bonds. It's no wonder that we've seen those markets rally. When you look at consumers being handed checks from the government, it's no wonder that things are a little better than what we initially thought. And I think it's no wonder also that stocks have rallied the way they have. I think the big question about all that spending, and in particular as it relates to the stock market, is how much of the recovery is maybe an advancement of the gains that we expect to see later on, and how much of that is simply a response to how badly we sold off, and so we recovered a little bit from there. And so I think that's the question that we're struggling with right now is this simply getting those gains a little bit earlier than we would have, or is it simply just a recovery from that weak bottom?
Brian, I thought it was really encouraging to see this week that shares of economically sensitive companies, banks, energy producers, manufacturers, are really leading the markets higher. Boeing up 15%, Halliburton up 18%. And along with that, encouraging to see that the price of oil is rising up to $34 a barrel, give or take, increased demand, less supply. Typically, oil leads the markets either on the way down or on the way up. So you got to be optimistic about economically cyclical stocks as well as the price of oil heading higher.
Yeah, a couple things. I think starting with oil, you and I have talked a number of times how it kind of, that whole oil story kind of got buried in the pandemic story. And had it not been for that, how consequential would oil and its effect on markets been? So now we're back in the mid-30s and things have settled a little bit. So it hopefully isn't part of the discussion going forward. I think we've also talked quite a bit about a certain handful of stocks leading the market and some opportunities maybe beyond those handful of stocks. And I think that's what you've seen in the last couple of weeks. In addition to some of the companies you're mentioning, Bob, the smaller companies have rallied a bit in the last couple of weeks. And I think some of those opportunities that exist for some of the cheaper parts of the of the stock market have reflected that there's some hope that things are stabilizing and we'll get a chance to move forward and have some success with those companies.
You know, Kyle, we talk often about the breadth of the market. You don't want a handful of stocks like the FANG stocks leading the markets higher. You want to see broad-based participation. Part of my reason for being encouraged to see the market broaden out, see the breadth increase to something, anything other than growth stocks. It's so encouraging to see the sensitive stocks. Pretty good sign that, you know, things are slowly turning the corner. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the program. You know, you had a report on consumer confidence this week. Numbers have been low, and there's this huge divergence now, of course, between stock prices and consumer sentiment. Unemployment at record highs, personal incomes, deepest drop on record, consumer spending, fastest fall in 60 years. But let's start with the consumer sentiment numbers. What are your comments on that?
Yeah, Bob. So, you know, the consumer confidence, consumer sentiment numbers, those are all things that economists look at as sort of preludes to consumer spending. And we always talk about how consumer spending drives 70% of the GDP. And so the consumer sentiment, consumer confidence, there's two different surveys from two different organizations, both came out this week, and they're kind of saying the same thing, that they think right now, at least, it looks like confidence and sentiment have bottomed out. Maybe you know, there's a better feeling among Americans because, you know, we're going back to work, we're seeing more businesses open, we're gradually, you know, seeing things come back to life. But big but there is the uncertainty of not knowing if there's going to be a second wave or second and third and fourth waves of virus, of not knowing, you know, exactly how things are going to reopen when they reopen. So there's a real reticence that we see not only in the confidence and sentiment numbers, but also in the numbers that you were talking about as far as the spending that we saw today, both today and in the GDP numbers that came out on Thursday.
Joel, durable goods numbers came out this week, follows a huge decrease in March. Any comments there?
Yeah, so, you know, durable goods, that was the number from April. So, you know, in some of these data, we're going to start seeing, you know, the first full calendar month of the pandemic. So we had a big drop in March, which is remarkable because, you know, we weren't seeing that much of a cutback in March. And so you add that to April, and it's going to be more remarkable. There were broad setbacks in the goods that were being ordered from manufacturers, especially things like commercial aircraft with travel down and automobiles with more people staying in place. But broadly, you know, people are cutting back on manufacturing orders.
Kyle, you and I, for a number of months now, have been trying to drill into growth stocks versus value stocks. We're finally seeing some participation on the value side of the market, not just in oil and gas, but the banks have started to come back to life. Maybe they're getting a handle on some of their loan loss reserves and setting aside, money to increase their capital base. But that's really good to see at this point in the market.
You know, Bob, I think we look at kind of the financial crisis and we all hope that we don't relive, some of the problems that existed then. And I think the realities are that the Fed and a lot of the overseers of the banks made sure that banks were better capitalized this time around. It meant that, things aren't going to look great for banks for a while. Profitability is going to take a pretty big hit. On the other hand, I think there's less question right now about which banks survive, especially the big banks, and more a question of, can they keep their dividends where they are? Can they, maintain their loan portfolios the way they're maintaining them? And so, I think you look at financials in particular, and they're going to have a bumpy road for a while. In fact, while much of the rest of the market was rallying early on after the big sell-off, financials retested their lows, and they're really one of the only sectors that did that. And so their recovery came a lot later. The rally that we saw this week came a lot later. And as you relate that to kind of this growth versus value debate, you look at the growth stocks that were really carrying the market. Things like Microsoft, Google, Apple, they're all trading at 25, 30, 35 times forward earnings now. Some of that is that forward earnings have been revised pretty significantly downward, but some of that is that those stocks year over year are up significantly, and even year to date are up significantly. And so when you look at kind of a valuation look at the market, yeah, it's really messy right now with our expectations for earnings. But it's going to be real difficult for those growth stocks to continue to carry the weight that they were carrying simply because of how expensive they've gotten.
Brian, you and I have been managing money for a long time. You look at a bear market, it's fairly common for clients to think that the bad times are going to last indefinitely. We have the opposite problem at the tops of markets. People think the good times are going to last forever. What advice do you have for folks now that have seen their accounts go down and they're struggling with, many things that are unknowable at this point in time? Well, what advice do you give them?
Well, I think, it's interesting in that I think sometimes people lose their appreciation for risk the farther they get away from more highly volatile periods of time, So if you go through periods of time like the financial crisis or what we went through the last couple of months ago, the farther you get away from it, sometimes you forget how you felt during it, And I think it's always good to kind of try and remind yourself of the context, either in the bottom or the tops, and try to keep some more level attitude about things. I like to kind of try and figure out where both sides of the risk are. And I think I'm really encouraged right now that markets reflect, I think, a pretty optimistic scenario. I think there's lots of good things baked into what our expectations are now. But I also think it makes it a little more challenging going forward when you think about where continual gains are going to come. Price-to-earnings ratios are a little bit higher than they've been. The market isn't cheap. And I think there's still a number of potentially negative things that could trip us up. So while we're feeling good in the moment and optimistic about the future, I think now is a good time to kind of remind yourself that, hey, it could get a little bit worse before it gets better in the long run. And I think that'll keep your attitude kind of steadied when the next round of volatility comes.
That's good advice. Kyle, let's spend a few minutes talking about the economy versus the stock market. A lot of people confuse the two. A lot of people think that the two are somehow tied together, and you and I both know that that's not the case. The economy is very different than the stock market. The stock market, for the most part, is looking into next year to get a sense of opportunities, valuations, what have you. The economy is more of a here and now type of issue. Help people understand the difference.
I think the challenge for investors when they look at an economic report and try to digest what that means for their portfolio is that they're driving in the rearview mirror. And so, we bring Joel on every week to talk about kind of some of the economic indicators. And the challenge there is that so many of those are a month old by the time we get them, or sometimes older for revisions. And for investors who are looking more than just at, the next day or two for their portfolio, as all investors should be looking well beyond the next day or two, is you know, what do those reports really mean for how I should invest? What do those reports really mean for the direction that we're headed? Because again, I think it tells us a lot about what has happened. It tells us a lot about even why those things matter, but it tells us absolutely nothing about the path forward. And so when you look at the stock market is a discounting mechanism. It looks at expectations for the future. It tries to assign some probability to those expectations. And then it says, what are we willing to pay based on the probability that we think this will happen? And again, those expectations aren't just for what did the data tell us about last month? It's what do we think the current environment says for what's going to happen over the next 6 months, year, 18 months. And I think the more important thing, if you really are an investor and not just a trader, is that you can't even just look at really what you expect for the next 6 months, because the reality is that tells you very little about your success as an investor. You're prepared with your portfolio to get through multiple years if you're well balanced of bad news. You're prepared for a wide range of expectations, but more likely, what's the economy? What's the environment? What's the world look like 3 to 5 years from now? Because that's really how you're choosing to invest. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that can happen along the way. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why maybe you've got to pay attention a little bit to what happens right now. But again, I think if you've got that long-term focus, you can afford to be a little bit more strategic in the way you pick and choose your opportunities.
Kyle, you and I both know that the stock market is a fairly accurate leading economic indicator, that the stock market is pretty accurate. You know, if the market's up, means the economy is going to gradually improve. Market's going down, tells you that things are not going to be so good. We don't often talk about the stock market as an economic indicator, but the reality is it's fairly accurate most years.
Oh, that's such a great point, Bob. And I think, you know, the challenge is that nothing happens in a straight line. And so you get a year like last year where you're going, okay, the market rallied, you know, just about out of its mind last year. And you'd expect that, okay, the economy is going to follow suit this year. Of course, we have, the unknown that comes along, the meteors from outer space that, I think really disrupted more than anything else what was an economy that was at least poised for some continued growth. And so, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It is a great predictor of the future. And again, I think that the challenge last year was that we just couldn't forecast what was happening this year. And the challenge right now, I think, is that, as we talked about at the open, there's so much stimulus out there. There's so much government intervention right now that, you know, we need some things to pan out now for that all really to ring true.
You know, I think the other thing I would add maybe is I kind of going back to the idea, where are we in terms of opportunities and risks that, you know, I'm a pretty optimistic guy, and I think the market reflects a fairly optimistic outcome right now. And that makes me feel pretty good about where we are today. But if you look at potentially what could trip us up versus potentially what could make us go significantly north from here, I do still think there are a number of things we need to be careful about. And, you know, when buying or being more aggressive, we often like to get a good deal and take advantage of a situation. I don't know that you're getting that right now, with the exception of maybe in certain sectors, but probably a pretty good time to sit back and take a breather for a while and see what happens the next month or two.
You know, Brian, that's really good advice, because it's important to acknowledge that we're hopeful about getting a vaccine, but it's not here yet. May not ever be here. We're hopeful about antibody tests. That might not happen either. So I'm hoping for one or the other at some point in time this winter or next spring. But I think it's important, as always, to manage for the upside and manage for the downside.
Exactly.
Joel, last comment. You know, you spend a lot of your day looking at economic reports. Besides the two that we talked about, what else has been grabbing your attention lately?
So the whole notion, you know, as you're saying, I mean, all of the money that governments have been doling out to put in consumers' pockets to get them to spend to keep the economy going. And just sort of the fact that either people don't feel confident about spending that money, or in many cases, they aren't in a position or don't feel that they're in a position to. They're homebound. You know, their favorite restaurant is closed. They don't have to wear fancy clothes because they're homebound, you know. So one of the things that was I found really striking today was in a number from the Bureau of Economic Analysis that showed that the savings rate, the personal savings rate in our country, shot up to 33% of disposable income in April. It rarely is above 10%. The average in the 61 years of the statistics was 8.9%. So 33%, and that included a 10.5% increase in income from, you know, the economic stimulus payments from the government. So it's the government setting things up for us to spend the money, but I guess you can't you can lead the horse to water and can't make a drink sort of thing. So we're not sure what's going to eventually get there to get that horse to drink.
Yeah, Joel, for the benefit of our listeners, I have to point out that you look really good with your beard. working from home looks even more distinguished.
I have mixed reviews of the people I'm quarantined with.
Yeah, let me guess. Mary doesn't like it as much.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.